Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Well, I just need to rearrange some things today. Gold was trying to make a comeback, some sort at didn't go lower, and that's something that we can always appreciate. It was interesting, the stock market up early morning trade was up over 100 points, then it reversed itself to negative, and the Dow had a good day today, but so did gold. Gold was up 270 today at 1267. 1267 for gold, up 270. Silver's up 11 at 1720. Platinum is up 8 at 1,055. Palladium is up 11 at $598. The USDX today is still stronger, 0.13 at 94.28. And crude oil, it reversed itself, up 1.26 at 44.70. And as I mentioned, the paper markets were stronger. You had the Dow up 222 points at 17,928. The NASDAQ was up 60 points at 4,809. And the S&P was up 25 at 2,084. Basically, all up, we're up 1.25%. And 10-year yield, 1.76. Euro, little pressure on the euro, 1.14. And the world markets were just happy overnight. Just happy. It just cracks me up, you know. And, you kind of ask yourself, I've been having a little bit of problems with my computer. I'll see if I can still have this information here. It was about hedge funds. Last year, they lost money for their investors. But the industry's top paid managers, you have five men earning more than $1 billion each in 2015. And, you know, how would you like to get paid $1 billion and lose money? Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you about that. Olivia, the program's over.
We'll
discuss this a little further after
finish.
The program.
Together, the 25 best hedge fund managers took home $13 billion, and that is 10% more than the previous year. And computer models played a critical role in their success. I don't know. Their success in one in getting paid, billions of dollars, but they hedge funds lost money for those who invested. So, hey.
Well, what can I tell you, Melody? You can run the business, or you can essentially run the investors.
Well, I think what happens is, people understand that in today's, computer trading, and they don't do a good job, but the numbers are high, people are confident, and that's all that matters. And these people are paid very well to keep the system going. They don't care how it goes as long as it keeps going. So,
well, I'll tell you what, Melody, if I had a job that I could make $1 billion for 1 year at,
yeah,
I don't know if I'd be really concerned about the second year.
I wouldn't think so.
I think after 1 year, I'd say, well, you folks are on your own now. I'm going to take my billion down to the beach and get some coconuts and whatever they have down on the
beach.
Yeah,
but you know what, Al? When people get $1 billion, guess what? They want another one. They want more. They want more and more and more. And there's a lot of money sitting there in the stock markets, and they're going to take it. So.
Well, I don't think anyone gets to be it's at least unlikely that anyone gets to be a billionaire who's satisfied with $1 billion. If you want to be a billionaire, you better aim for $5 billion or $20 billion or whatever, $100 billion. Right? Same thing with millions. It's just if you're going to be satisfied with $1 million, you better shoot for $5 or $10 million. I'm going to guess that's a fundamental principle. If you're going to allow your ego to drag you, insofar as you need to rely on your ego to generate a fortune, your ego's probably got to be bigger than the fortune that you are willing to settle for, if you catch my drift.
Mm.
Got an article
caught
here.
It. Caught it out.
Got an article here from Business Insider. It's one of a couple of them that deal with the idea of business profits, corporate profits. One of the biggest economic warning signs still looks frightening. After disastrous expectations from analysts, 71% of Standard & Poor companies have reported their quarterly earnings so far have beat consensus projections for profits. About 87% of Standard & Poor 500 have reported as of Sunday. But in spite of beating the projections, companies are still in a profit recession. Defined as two or more quarters of negative earnings growth, we are now three quarters deep into this corporate-specific recession. Profits dropped 7.1% for Standard & Poor 500 companies year over year for the first quarter. Global corporate earnings are in recession now. Falling profit margins have been the important warning signal and cause for an eventual U.S. recession. Andrew Lapfong, head of the quantitative strategy at Societe Generale, views the profit downturn as a sign that stocks are too overvalued and the economy is weaker than you think. The Standard & Poor 500, the year-on-year drop in profit was the most since the third quarter of 2009. Global earnings are now 14% off the peak set in 2014, at the same time that equity prices are 25% higher. Gravity calls, all right? Meaning when the earnings are 14% down and the prices are 25% up, there is an irrational situation that's going to be corrected. And what they're saying, gravity calls, they just mean the prices are going to have to fall to some degree in order to match earnings. Earnings are down 14%, prices are up 25%. There's going to have to be some sort of an adjustment. I'm not saying that equity prices for stocks, they're not going to drop by 39%, that's not the point, but they're 25%, they've grown 25% when earnings fell 14%, there's going to be a correction. And what they're tracing this back to are corporate profits. And the reason that's important is a corporation has to generate a profit in order to have money to invest in the corporation in order to make the corporation more profitable. Now, it can also borrow money, but the evidence is that the debt has gone too far. And if a corporation is going to be more productive, it has to invest money in capital equipment, whatever they need to actually generate profits, not just to make dividends, not just to cook the books. There's another article on the same idea. Global corporate debt now far exceeds pre-Lehman Brothers bubble. This is from International Business Times. Corporate debt across the world has reached extreme levels, warned the Institute of International Finance, a global banking watchdog. More, that corporate debt far exceeds the pre-Lehman financial bubble. In other words, we're in deeper right now than we were in 2008. Lehman Brothers, of course, were credited with nearly precipitating a global economic collapse when it declared bankruptcy in 2008. As the credit cycle ages, following years of record-setting bond issuance, there are growing concerns about signs of stress in corporate balance sheets. They're saying the corporations have had record-setting levels of bond issuance. They have been borrowing and borrowing and borrowing, right? And now it may be that that borrowing is going to come back to haunt them. The IIF, that's the Institute of International Finance, said there was a double threat in emerging nations. There's a fivefold increase in corporate debt to $25 trillion over the last 10 years. For developed markets such as the United States and Europe, they're seeing record junk bond issuance. U.S. companies have been borrowing as if there was no tomorrow, even though their profits began to decline in 2014. Profits are going down, they're borrowing money, and they're not borrowing it to increase their productivity, or at least not generally. They're borrowing it in large measure to cook the books and perhaps provide handsome salaries and bonuses for the people that are running the corporations. For the most part, this very significant amount of debt has been used to pay dividends, buy back shares, and fund M&A transactions rather than financing capital spending, which has been on a declining trend since 2012. You know, everybody wants a higher standard of living. But the only way you really get a higher standard of living is you must become more productive. Right? Now, the government has been able to deceive us into believing that we're doing okay with cheap credit. And people think, well, we're doing okay. We got cheap credit. I got a liar's loan where you almost didn't have to pay any interest on the mortgage for the house. We seem to be doing better. But the truth of the matter is we're not doing better. We're going deeper into debt, and we are not increasing our productivity. We're shipping our some of our productive industries and some of our productive jobs have been shipped to foreign countries. We're allowing illegal aliens to flood into this country and take jobs and reduce the wage scale for people in the lower and middle classes. Productivity has been declining, and it has to result in a diminished standard of living. For a while, you can get away with borrowing to paper over that loss of productivity, but in the end, there's a fundamental rule. If you don't work and you don't produce, you don't eat. Huh? We live in a world right now where we are told that we are entitled. Some of us are entitled to receive checks from government, subsidies for the rich, entitlements for the poor. We don't have to really work for them. We just enjoy them. If we'll vote for congressmen and senators, they will give us free money. Sounds like a great deal, but it can't be sustained. Where's that money coming from? The government hasn't been able to generate enough revenue with taxes to support its entitlement programs. It hasn't even been able to generate enough money with loans from the private sector to support all of its programs. It's been forced to rely on the Federal Reserve to be its number one creditor because private creditors have backed away. And sooner or later, the Federal Reserve, and in fact, they tapered off in 2014, Federal Reserve doesn't want to lend more money to the United to the U.S. government, which means we're coming to a moment when the U.S. government's going to have to admit, "Oops, you know, you'll never believe what happened, but we're out of Schlitz." And those of you who are relying on us, those of you who depend on the government to provide your support, you're going to see a problem. You're going to experience a decline in income that's probably going to be painful. We'll have another article on that. We'll take a break here in a few minutes. I don't want to start on the next, well, I don't want to start on the article we have on Trump, but we have one that we'll get to in a moment after the first break. Talking about Donald Trump, and he's talking about the national debt and how it has to be renegotiated. Our creditors have to take a haircut. Which means what? It means for every $100 that you have in U.S. bonds, creditors are going to have to agree to, instead of getting $100 back, they're going to have to get less. And no one is saying how much less, but it's going to be less. And if it's renegotiated, they'll say, oh, this isn't really a default because the creditors are agreeing to get less. But the only reason they'll agree is because if they don't agree to cut the debt, the government will simply repudiate the whole thing. Go ahead.
You know, since his first comments about that came out on Friday, yesterday he changed his mind. But I think the most important part about what he said on Friday is to the fact that these thoughts, that it shows us there really isn't anything that anyone can do.
I think that's what's been explained to him over the weekend.
I think so, too. He had a rude awakening.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you start negotiating or trying to play with those bonds that people are holding, that will collapse all world economies overnight. Now, not to say that the collapse of world economies overnight is not going to happen, but when you start tinkering with the U.S. bonds, and I came up with some numbers before we go into break here, and I'm just talking about the $20 trillion of debt that, you know, I'm not talking about the unfunded liabilities and so forth. We're just talking about the $20 trillion. Of that, there's a huge chunk of that, you have to remember, that is owned by you, by the listeners, in your pension plans, in your retirement accounts, and so forth. And $5 trillion of that debt is in government trust funds like Social Security. $5.1 trillion is held by individuals, pension funds, state and local governments. And then the remaining is $2.5 trillion that is held by the Federal Reserve. So,
a lot of debt out. A lot of debt, and it's too much to be paid.
Too much to be paid. When people make $1 billion a year and these numbers are floating around, people, they have lost reality when it comes to what $1 billion is, what $1 trillion is. These numbers are just being thrown around like it's nothing.
Well, in a sense,
it is.
It kind of is nothing.
Nothing.
In that it's all
it's a
digital,
lot of nothing.
It's digital or paper currency, and it doesn't really exist in the sense that gold and silver exist. And the average person, oh, it doesn't make any difference if stuff spends. Yeah, you wait. We'll see if it spends. And if it doesn't, there are a lot of people who are going to lose their assets. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. We were going to talk a little bit about Trump. Here's an article from CNBC. Peter Schiff was interviewed recently on, and he spoke about Trump. And the headline is, Trump just exposed America's dirty little secret. This goes back 2 days ago, Sunday. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump just revealed an inconvenient truth about U.S. debt. This is according to Peter Schiff. Last week, Trump joined CNBC's Squawk Box to discuss a wide range of topics, including U.S. debt, interest rates, and replacing the Fed chair Janet Yellen. It was Trump's comments about potentially renegotiating more than $19 trillion in U.S. debt and the sensitivity surrounding higher interest rates that raised eyebrows. Well, some observers argued that Trump's approach could be tantamount to a debt default. Peter Schiff told CNBC the GOP nominee was fundamentally correct in his observation. Look, what we're talking about here is Trump says he wants to renegotiate with the creditors. He's talking about the $19 trillion official national debt. And he wants to get them to agree that they will take, they're entitled to, say, $1 million. He wants them to agree to take less than what they're actually entitled to. He wants to renegotiate the debt. All right, that's what he has in mind. But as we've told you a bunch of times on this program, when the debt disappears, it also wipes out the correlative paper assets, right? How are they going to renegotiate the debt, meaning the U.S. bonds that are squirreled away in U.S. pension funds, without reducing the value of the pension funds, right? let's just pull the number out of the air and say, let's say they're going to renegotiate down 30%. Somebody's got a U.S. bond. They've got a collection of them that are allegedly worth $1 million. And Mr. Trump is going to say, listen, let's make a deal. And you agree to take only $700,000 instead of $1 million that you thought you were entitled to. That's a $300,000 loss. Huh? And it's going to hurt people badly. And this is the big trouble with having a debt-based monetary system. When you finally get to the point where the debt can't be paid, you are going to wipe out paper assets. Here the article continues, Peter Schiff, he says, Trump just admitted on CNBC that America has too much debt to afford a rate hike, and that he wants our creditors to accept less than 100 cents on their treasuries. In other words, Trump knows a U.S. government default debt is inevitable. And my point would be, first, Trump doesn't just know a default is inevitable in the sense that it might happen before the end of the century. Trump must know that such a default is coming soon. I don't think Trump would raise the issue if he didn't believe debt default was imminent, perhaps before the end of his first year as president. He's at least thinking this is a possibility within the next 12, 18 months. That's my guess. Second, when Trump talks about wanting our creditors to accept less than 100 cents on their treasuries, the big question is how much less? If Trump is coming in and say, you folks that are holding bonds, you've got to agree to take only 97 cents on every dollar's worth of bond. Well, all right, nobody's going to like it, but you can live through it. But are they going to restructure those debts by reducing payments by 3 cents or by 50 cents or by 80 cents? The question is, how much restructuring is Trump thinking about? And I've argued for 4 or 5 years now that when the restructuring takes place, when the debt is finally defaulted on, I am guesstimating that at least 80% of the debt won't be paid and probably 90%. That's where I think we're headed. Trump must know that we're about to enter into a situation very much like that of Greece. Greece was overly indebted. Greece couldn't pay its bills. Greece negotiated a 50% haircut with its creditors a couple of years ago. They said, gee, we can't pay all the money we owe. How about you guys only take half? And then we promise, Scout's Honor, we'll pay you the other half. And the creditors agreed, all right, we'll take a 50% cut. And they said, oh, yeah, we'll go along with that. But Greece couldn't even pay the remaining 50%. All right? After they all agreed to take the 50 cents on the dollar, Greece still couldn't pay and wanted the creditors to take another 50% haircut on the balance, 50% of the 50% that was still owed, meaning they wanted another 25% off the debt. In the end, Greek creditors will get almost nothing on their debts. In the end, U.S. creditors will also get almost nothing on their U.S. bonds. Who's going to be hurt? A lot of people sit back and say, what do we care about bonds? I don't have any bonds. Just the super rich people and the big institutions, they'll be hurt. Nobody cares. But it's not going to be just the rich folk. It's not going to be just the big institutions. Any person or institution like pension funds who's significantly invested in U.S. bonds is going to lose their assets. Trump is implicitly telling us that retirees whose pensions are backed by U.S. bonds are going to take a terrible loss within the next 24 months. And it could be 36. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it might also be the next 6. All right? This is one of those things we are finally, and the big story perhaps about Trump talking about this and then backing off when he came, the implication is he recognized and was willing to talk about this problem because it's enormous. And it poses an incredible threat to our economy, to our standard of living. A lot of things are on the table right now, depending on how this debt is handled. And he came up and he talked about it. And people said, uh-oh, Trump is talking about the debt. And then Trump came back a couple days later and said, oops, maybe I misspoke. All right, he's backing off on the debt. Why? Because I think he's begun to understand the enormity of the problem, and it's not one that can be escaped. The debt can't be paid. Right? It is too great for us to repay. And we're talking about at $19 trillion, the official national debt right now. If push came to shove, we could pay that maybe over a course of 10 years. We might be able to. It would be difficult, but we might be able to do it. But other sources, John Williams, we've said it a bunch of times, that John Williams has calculated that the real national debt is in the neighborhood of $100 trillion. There's no way we can pay that. Economist Lawrence Kotlikoff and the Congressional Budget Office have calculated that including unfunded liabilities, real debt is $200 trillion. If the real debt is $200 trillion, it works out to something like $650,000 in debt for every man, woman, and child in the country. Can I see a show of hands for everyone who's listening to the program who has an extra $650,000 for yourself, for your spouse, for each of your kids, or maybe you're just for you. You got an extra $650,000? That's your fair share of the national debt if it's as big as Lawrence Kotlikoff and the congressional budget calculate. Can you pay that? Will you pay it? Even if you had the money, would you pay it? And the answer is no for most people. They don't have the money, but if they do, they're still going to say, heck with that. I'm not kicking in $650,000 to fund an irresponsible government. Huh? And this is the basis of an argument I've been advancing for 5 years now. What can't be paid won't be paid. The debt is too great to be repaid. Right? Because the debt can't be paid, it's not going to be paid. It doesn't sound like it's, again, doesn't sound particularly brilliant to make that equation or come to that conclusion, but it is a profoundly important step in understanding where this country's headed. The debt can't be paid. Okay, that doesn't disturb people necessarily. Well, the debt can't be paid. What's that to me? Here's what it is to you. If you or your neighbors or your employer or anyone that you rely on, depend on, like, or love has a stack of U.S. bonds or a pension fund full of U.S. bonds and the debt can't be paid, guess what? Those bonds become proportionally worthless. If they say we can't pay 50% of the debt, okay, 50% of the bonds that you had in your pension fund that were supposedly worth, let's say, $500 million, they're now worth $250 million, right? And it means that the retirees who had counted on those bonds to fund their retirement have just seen their retirement cut in half. And it won't, and the money just disappears. It's gone. It disappears when the government says it can't pay the debt. The correlative assets have to vaporize. They just disappear. They're not worth anything anymore. It goes back to this fundamental idea I've been talking about for several years. One man's debt is another man's asset. If we wipe out the debt, we wipe out the correlative asset. And there's no way of getting around this. And that's why this situation is so extraordinarily dangerous. And this is why we tell you, get ready, get prepared, get into some, do what you have to do to get through a very difficult time. All right, food, water, guns, ammunition, medical supplies, gold, silver, toilet paper. This is all going to break down, and it's going to happen when? I don't know. They can't say when. No one can say when. All right, so far as I know, or if anyone can, it certainly isn't me or anyone I know. They might be able to pull the plug at a certain moment. They may have just said, well, we'll do this and we'll do it in September. Pull the plug. Or we'll wait until next June. I don't know when they're going to do it. I don't know if they're in a position to control it. I don't know if they're inclined to pull the plug or they're just going to drag it on as long as they possibly can. But we're going to see this in our lifetimes. This is not something that's going to be, we're not talking about a problem that's going to manifest 20 years from now or 50 years from now. We're talking about something that could manifest this year. I'm not saying it will. I'm not even predicting that it will, but it's not impossible. As we said, no one knows. It's not only true that we don't know when it's going to happen, we don't even know when it's not going to happen. This could happen at any time, and insofar as we see someone like Trump talking about it, it's evidence. It's not proof, but it's evidence that Trump is sitting there and he recognizes, uh-oh, this thing is big, and it's going to happen during his first term, and maybe even before. But what's he going to do? He's just encountered the debt, and people have explained this to him. He thought, well, we'll just renegotiate it. He said, he's explained in his interview, he said, we've done this in the past. I've done this as business thing. When we were having a problem, we renegotiated the debt. Not this one you're not going to renegotiate. You, in order to renegotiate this debt down to a level where it allows government to function in a way that is apparently solvent, you're going to have to cut this debt by 50%, and that's if it's $19 trillion. If it's really $200 trillion, they're going to have to knock out something like 80, 90% of the debt. And even then it would leave, if they knock out 80% of the debt, it would leave another $20 trillion, maybe more. Now, the point is that this debt is such an enormous problem. There's no getting around it. Here's more from Peter Schiff. He said, if the Fed raises interest rates, refinancing the debt doesn't help. Right? They've been able to hold interest rates down, and probably the primary reason to say, oh, we've been holding interest rates down so Joe Sixpack can go out and borrow money to buy a new car or a new flat screen TV or a new house in order to stimulate the economy. Well, that might be true, but it may also be true that the real reason they've held interest rates down is because the government can't afford to pay higher interest rates on its debt, which indicates that maybe the government can't even service the existing debt right now. Not just that they can't pay off the principal, maybe they can't even pay what would be a normal and fair interest rate of somewhere between 3 and 5%. All of which is just saying that we're getting close to some very serious problems, and you folks had better act if you want to preserve your assets and if you want to avoid being victimized. If I were sitting, you know, I can't tell you what's going to happen. I can't give you prophecy. I'm just telling you that if I were sitting on, let's say I had $500,000 in U.S. bonds, if I had to sell those bonds right now, if I could sell them at a 10% discount, right, and I only get, instead of getting $500,000, I only got $450,000, I guarantee you I would sell those bonds right now and move them into something tangible like gold or silver. And it's not, I'm just telling you that as a sales pitch. I'm telling you, sooner or later, those pieces of paper are going to become virtually worthless. And it won't do you any good to sit back. It's like the government right now, they're talking about, oh, well, we need to renegotiate. Trump is talking about we need to renegotiate the debt. Oh, yeah? How much are you going to knock it down? They're not talking about renegotiating the debt to knock down 10% because that won't be enough to make a difference. They're talking about knocking the debt down. I'll bet you Trump, if the truth of the matter is, Trump is going to at least want a 30% reduction in the debt. That's what he's going to perhaps talk about if he gets where they renegotiate and they say, look, your creditors have to take a haircut for 30%. My point is, if I had $500,000 in U.S. bonds right now and I could sell them for $450,000 right now, I would take the deal and I would dance down the road. Because in my estimation, you hang on to those bonds long enough and you're going to see government offering you 70% of what you invested. And instead of getting $500,000 back, you're only going to get $350,000. And 90% is much better than 70%. Now, I don't know for a fact how much Trump or anyone else is going to suggest is discounted, is how much they're going to diminish the debt when they finally do the restructuring. But I know they're going to do restructuring, and they're going to probably do hyperinflation besides that because it'll also let them get out from under the debt. But we're not going to get out from under this debt except by financial chicanery because we are no longer a highly productive nation. If we were productive, we could get out from under it. We're not. We're a nation full of entitlements and subsidies. And Melody, do you want to add something?
I just wanted to say we're past our break time, and we had to stay on schedule today.
Okay. Now let's take a break. Melody and I will be back in a moment. And stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I wanted to bring this special today for Mint State 62 $20 St. Gaudens. They're beautiful coins. We got a little bit selection of dates for Mint State 62 $20 St. Gaudens. And I went back. I just picked a date, March 29th. Spot gold was $1,220. Today, it's based on $1,267. So we have gold higher today by $47. The Mint State 62 $20 St. Gaudens are actually up $125 since March 29th. So another sign that shows how the $20 gold pieces can outperform gold bullion. So if you just had a gold bullion coin, your coin would only have risen by $47. But if you had a Mint State 62 $20 St. in your portfolio, you would have gained $125. I even just went back to a week ago just to show you what happens when gold goes down. There's not a lot of change. It's just a few days. But spot gold from May 6th is down $26, and the 62 $20 saints are basically down 20. And I think I saw a new price list coming through right prior to the program. So I'll guarantee you they're probably up a few dollars. So since gold had a reversal today. So great price per coin is $1,475. But with each trade, not per coin, but with each trade, you'll also receive a 1 ounce 2016 American Silver Eagle. Again, not per coin, per trade, for $1,475. This also includes your shipping cost, your insurance cost, a free Silver Eagle for $1,475, and a beautiful Mint State 62 $20 St. Gaudens. So just give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800 375-4188. And make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, these programs are archived on a daily and monthly basis.
We got a couple of just one last paragraph out of the report on Trump. And again, they're talking about Puerto Rico. And the Commonwealth can't pay because they're broke. And the same math applies on the homeland just as on the mainland just as it applies in Puerto Rico. We can't pay either. This is from Peter Schiff. And if interest rates go up, Donald Trump is right. There is no choice other than to tell our creditors that they're taking a big haircut. Now, I disagree with Schiff in that regard. There's already no choice, right? The only choice is perhaps get out of harm's way by getting away from U.S. bonds as quickly as possible. But if you're going to hang around, there's going to be a big haircut. And it has nothing to do with whether they raise interest rates or not. Raising interest rates will aggravate the situation, but the situation is so enormous. You know, it's like having an elephant fall on top of you, right? And then having a dog climb up on the elephant. Well, the dog on the elephant's adding weight, right? But believe me, the big problem is the elephant, right? And more weight from the dog, that's more problem, but it's the same thing with the interest. The big problem is the size of the debt itself. Creditors are already caught in a very peculiar position, and they're not going to get out of this other than by just running down the road and selling those bonds while some people are still willing to buy them. Time is coming. That won't be true. What else?
I just wanted to make another comment. And when this defaults, you know, we're in a position, we are so globalized that it will change how monetary policy and how governments will change the whole system, not just here in the States. And they're already talking about it. You had the chief economist of the Bank of International Settlements. He wrote some new paper. But what he talks about is the international monetary and financial system and the weakness are our currencies, particularly the U.S. And this is, he's talking about the U.S. Currency, the U.S. dollar. But what he talks about and what his paper is all about is the most ambitious possibility would be to develop and implement new global rules of the game that would help instill greater discipline in national policies. He's talking about globalization of currencies. Of a financial system, he's the chief economist for the Bank of International Settlements. His paper basically talks about the dollar, and 90% of all foreign exchange transactions, the dollar is involved in. Mm-hmm. It accounts for 60% of official foreign exchange reserves as well as debts and assets outside the U.S. The euro came in second, a distant second, at about 20-25%. So, folks, it is all about our currency, and they know when we have our financial problem, when they know that, and they want it, the whole financial system globally will change. So they really don't care about you.
Well, you talk about how many people or how many institutions are holding Federal Reserve notes and or U.S. Treasuries as collateral in their banks.
Yep.
And the answer is a lot. And they're going to be beat out of that wealth. It's going to just vaporize to some significant degree. It's just going to disappear. Just like it will affect them the same way it affects pension funds in this country. All of a sudden, you thought you had $1 billion. Now you don't. Now you got maybe a couple hundred million. And the consequences will be horrific for everyone on the face of the globe. And when the author of the article that you're talking about, when he's talking about we need new rules, here's a rule for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right? How about we have gold and silver, we restore gold and silver as the backbone of the monetary system? Because you can't create a written rule that can't be ignored, overcome, outsmarted. All right? The reality is, if you want to impose a rule that will actually impose some discipline on the banks, you say you guys are going to trade in terms of silver and gold. Not in terms of paper silver, not in terms of paper gold, but in terms of physical. All accounts will be settled in terms of physical gold and or silver. Now, government can't simply spin currency out of thin air. If they can't pay in gold or silver, they're broke, they're bankrupt, they're insolvent. All right? Dump them. Gold will impose the discipline that this man is asking for. And the rules, he wants more rules, it'll just be more razzle-dazzle, that's all it is. They'll just, if they can get some new rules, and they'll say, oh, we won't do this with paper anymore, or digital currency, they'll be lying. But they might buy another decade, who knows, after the dollar collapses, they might be able to bamboozle people into going along with it for another decade with a fiat, with a new and improved fiat currency, which means instead of having green ones, we'll have pink ones. And that'll be the new rule.
And you know, people, we talk about it. I mean, I've been doing this for, you know, 21, 22 years. You've been doing it for how long? And we have people, my clients, often say, I can't believe this is going on for as long as it has. But when you have the dollar that is involved in about 90% of foreign exchange transactions, yeah, still doesn't take away that the purchasing power has declined over these years and so forth. You're still losing your purchasing power, but it's how they're able to keep their little game going. And that's what it is a game.
It's not even a game, because people are going to die before this is done.
Yeah, well, they will.
This is a Ponzi scheme is what it really is. And they have, it's a brilliant Ponzi scheme, and they've managed to make it work for 45 years or more. They've been working up to it for perhaps a century. But it's going to fail, just like Madoff did. And somebody's going to be left holding the bag, and who knows, we're going to probably put them in jail or try them for treason or something. I don't know what will happen. But the average individual is going to suffer a great loss. If they're waiting on retirement, you know, if they think they're going to get it out of U.S. bonds, they're crazy. You know, one of the things Frank, our producer, pointed out, reminded us, is that if we were going to have a gold or silver-based currency, if that were true on a particular on a global basis, the price of gold would have to go up enormously. This is when you start talking about $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 per ounce for gold. Now, will we have a gold-based monetary system? Is that in our future? It should be if we wanted to return to a rational world, but I'm not betting that that's going to happen anytime soon. Even if the dollar folds, right, for whatever reason, is taken out of the equation, the powers that be, their first step will be to try to saddle us with another fiat currency. They'll give us some razzle-dazzle about special drawing rights or the Bank of International Settlements or the IMF or whatever. And this time, we're going to do it right. Uh-huh. But the truth is, it'll be another Ponzi scheme, unless they're doing gold and silver. And
when I said for ages and ages and ages, I think you'll see perhaps gold play. Gold is going to play an important part when this system collapses, because you're going to have countries that aren't going to accept. I mean, we never know what China's really thinking, but they have made statements to the point where, you know, they don't think that the global trade should be based on one reserve currency. And I think what will happen is the gold will play in a part in the in a trade unit. You know, we already have baskets of currencies trading, and I think gold will be a part of that. It'll stabilize the currencies, and they'll put caps on it to where, you know, they can't fluctuate, and I think that's how they'll deal with that problem. Now, what happens here in the States? Is there going to be like a two-tier system as far as our currency? Will our currency actually be backed by gold and so forth? That's where they'll resist using a gold-backed currency. So I think it just depends on, you know, what is really going on at any point in time, because I don't think the people here in the States, you know, understand, you know, gold and, you know, how our currency needs to be backed and so forth. So, you know, they might be able to pull a fast one over the people here. Who knows? I don't know, but
they've been doing it for years.
Been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, to talk about, you know, you can fool some of the people all the time and all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all of the time. I believe I don't remember who said that, but in any case, it
you
turns
just
out
it.
That you can fool virtually all of the people almost all of the time. You can fool them for generations. And without them picking up and understanding the scheme and how vulnerable they are.
Which is true. I mean, we go to our education and, you know, our media. I mean, everybody's heard about Facebook and so forth. You know, our people's thoughts, they're you know, are being, you know, concentrated
being
to various,
being influenced. But, you know, I saw a report just recently, two reports. One, people on Facebook, the people that control it aren't allowing conservative opinions to be freely expressed on the Facebook websites, for lack of a better term. But I've seen also that there are elements of government that want to come out and they want to diminish freedom of speech on the internet because they're concerned that people who have dissident views are having undue influence. And what they're doing is they're saying the public's not buying the government malarkey anymore. They're starting to listen to people on the internet that are trying to tell the truth, not trying to promote the government line. And the government doesn't like that. So we live in a situation where, you know, we're all vulnerable and we are all forced to use our own eyes, use our own ears, and try to discern for ourselves what is the truth. Am I listening to somebody who's telling me the truth, or am I listening to somebody who's telling me a lie? And we're going to have to all refine our ability to discern, because you're not going to be able to trust everyone who shows up and feeds you more malarkey. You're going to have to discern between the truth and the malarkey, and you're going to have to do it on your own, because if you're going to let the politicians do your thinking for you, in the end, you're going to get caught, right? They're not there to tell you the truth. They are there to deceive you and pacify you and ultimately to exploit you. And you're going to have to find on your own, because it's your future that's at stake, and you, other than the good Lord, are the only one who's going to be able to protect yourself. And you're going to do it by refining your ability to discern between the truth and the malarkey. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.